One of the things I try to propose, just generally when I do courses, but for here as well, is a pragmatic things. You know, I like to. Everybody else is going to talk about art for the most part, and I—that's so good. That's coming, right? I'd love to talk about that, but I was a writing major on a writing scholarship at school, and I was the guy in the back going, "How do you submit to agents? What are subsidiary rights?" Yeah, and you know, and no one knew, and I was enormously ill prepared for a career as a writer. I love the fact that this weekend offers you guys things that a lot of workshops absolutely do not. I'd say at least 30%, maybe as much as half of the course content here is very practically oriented, and that's invaluable. I don't know how many of you go to workshops very often, but you don't get much of that. You know, you really don't, and eat that up, because having a writing career and being a writer are astonishingly different things. Most of all that I learned the hard way. I'll talk a little about that in my keynote today, but so yeah, take advantage of that, you know. And it also allows me to teach my course tomorrow on to be really self-indulgent and teach my thing on soliloquies and lyric prose, and then I can balance that with. I used to teach a day-long seminar on reading the writing life. It was entirely just about day-to-day realities of writing, and this was a segment of it. It was interesting when I looked at my notes for that course and blew the dust off them and took them out of their Egyptian tomb to realize how much the world had changed in those regards. I'm like, Rolodex? Really? Rolodex? There was even a section in that on whether or not you should use a computer. You know, I mean, so it was in the antediluvian 90s or something like that. So it was actually, I really enjoyed going over all of that and brushing up on it and kind of updating it to realize how I had, in fact, updated my own process and all of that. So what I really just want to talk about today is we're going to assume we are living as writers, okay? And, you know, and the phone is ringing off the hook with Newsweek or whatever, because that's what happens when you live as a writer. But the things that are practical, efficient, and convenient for you to be professional, to be efficient, to organize yourself, and to save yourself a whole lot of time, you know, not have a lot of downtime. And so I really, literally want to be... Oh, pizza's here! I really just want to talk about almost, you know, physical aspects of this. What ought to be in arm's reach of you? Okay, we're going to talk about organization and things like that. And while I'll give you my methodology for things, understand that a lot of this is just a guideline, maybe to get you thinking about things you might not otherwise. There are lots of different ways to organize yourself. There's lots of different ways. And over time, you come up with your own methodology, you know. So none of this is carved in stone. Just try to use this approach as a template for what works for you, okay? So, what I want to talk about right off the bat is your desk. We'll just start with the desk itself. All right? We're going to do Arms Reach 101. All right? Now, I think it's really nice and romantic if you can write on, you know, a door that's between two piles of bricks, you know, in the attic or whatever. That's great if you can do that, and that's, you know, but the romance of the garret soon wanes, and I urge you to get the best desk you possibly can, and a good desk is expensive. Part of the reason is simply organization. A good desk should have a touch above it, right? These are all possible. If you don't really care about it being all pretty, it's very easy to get a little touch, you know. It just gives you access to documents, files, you know, you can keep your external hard drives on, something like that, you know, all kinds of different things. They make great in-out boxes, they make great letter files, you know. I keep my stationery or letterhead or labels, you know, what, you know, my little, it's sort of my mini office supply room, right? So, and it keeps things out of clutter, off the floor, things like that. If you can't get a desk with one of those big drawers that acts as a hanging file, I think that's worth it. space, that space tends to be reserved for tower PC space in a lot of things. If you want to use it that way, that's great. I don't use it. I actually still use file cabinets. I'm all analog like that. And a couple of drawers, because you're going to have ridiculous amounts of nonsense that pile up. I know this sounds very basic, but we're going to start very basic. How many of you have had office jobs or work office jobs? I was a temp word processing operator for law firms and lots of other things for years and years. And at least it taught me, you know, what are really good office supplies to have on hand. You know, how to be efficient and what people are going to demand of you when they show up. So it gave me good, I have good best practices. You know, how's that? So, you know, some drawers that you're going to keep, sundries, office sundries, I think are very important. Because that stuff, if you leave it by itself, they multiply, they take over your desk. All right, so a desk with some drawers with a hanging file is great. PC thing is great. I'm a big advocate of having a left or right hand return. You know what that is? That's the smaller part of the L-shaped desk. Okay. If you're somebody who works on a laptop, a return is great to put the laptop on and use the big surface for your office things. If you're able to use your space that way, it's just really convenient to be able to have a return. You can get an Office Depot or a Staples desk that's laminate, you know, that doesn't look embarrassing for $300. If you want to spend $500, you can get a pretty good one. Good desks ain't cheap. Solid wood desks, you know, I recommend Craigslist. just get it out of here. So, you know, especially if you don't really care that it's gorgeous, you know, if you really do work in a basement or an attic or something, knock yourself out. You know, there are really lots of good things available very cheaply. If you want something new, though, Staples or Office Depot for $300, you get a perfectly decent desk. pardon me. Desks are there for two reasons, right? One is obviously work on. The other thing is to maximize your storage, right? Not all of us have even a dedicated office, right? We share space with something else. We're using a converted dining room, den, whatever. You know, I've worked anywhere, you know, and had to make good use of space. I've lived in tiny little places where you had to be some sort of submarine architect in order to get your place going the way you need. But here's the deal with the desk. Everybody has this view. You've got this Victorian wood office, you know, that's just nothing but endangered woods everywhere. and has a brass telescope looking at the window. And there you are with a big view of the bay. You know, don't do that. If you have that view of the bay, put your desk facing away from it. Look at the wall. If you want to put a nice picture up on the wall, hey, swell. But for what it's worth, you'll look at that damn view and go, it's a dream. And you won't get shit done. You know, views are dangerous. So if you don't have the good fortune to live somewhere where you can look out somewhere nice, I live in Venetia, Bay Area, and I could turn my desk to a beautiful view of the Carquinez Strait, and I don't. I have a blank wall with a nice big above it. And because it doubles as my music, it's my DJ studio, there's lots of ugly sound-absorbing foam everywhere, and that helps too. Who the hell wants to look at that? You know, the idea is, if you're going to make stuff up, you know, part of the thing in your desk design, your space design, the environment you're building for yourself is to minimize the space. Now, Hemingway said something like, you can always tell when a writer isn't working because his kitchen is spotless. And I find that literally true. You know, and the deal is here, there's always something that needs to be done, isn't there? There is a life, you kind of have to do this in opposition to the life that is pulling you its way. In some ways. So you have to will this into being as much as you will the work itself. Right? So what you're trying to do, my whole point in all of this really is actually more theoretical than practical, and that is you are trying to create a space in which you are comfortable working. And the idea of having things in arm's reach, convenient to you, and knowing where that is, having a habit of it, puts less between you and that page. Right? because life is always going to be wanting to do that. So anything you can do to help yourself out here is welcome. And when you could be writing, you know, the best sentence ever versus looking for a rubber band. Okay, so now how many of you work on computers? By now almost everybody does. Did everybody work on a computer? Yeah, okay. I'm not going to get into Mac versus PC argument or any of that other crap. Okay, that's a religious argument. I'm not entering into it. Here's what I will say before I actually start getting into the nature of software and organization. I do highly recommend you invest in a decent keyboard. All right? The keyboards that come with my PC are, you know, they're literally $2 keyboards. You can buy one for $5. And they're mushy. How many of you, let me even get more basic. How many of you are touch typists? Oh, that's actually an unusually high percentage. You know, I can turn the lights off and hit you in the head and you can still... I'm amazed how many professional writers are hunting peck. You know, usually because they write when they're really young, they have a driving desire to, and they've taught themselves, and that's it. You're stuck with it, right? My deal, I'm like some kind of... I think that I'm OCD enough that I'm like, I want to get that crap out of there as fast as I can. I do not want a logjam at my hand. So I took typing classes in high school, which is also, by the way, a great way to meet chicks. Yeah. So, I type on a decent keyboard, I type 110 words a minute. I mean, that's a lot. You know, it's one of the reasons for a while, it's probably the highest paper processing operator in the same level. So it was glorious days before it was just a standard secretarial degree. But invest in a good keyboard. Now, what is a good keyboard? Right. Could this be more basic? But we live with this crap so much, you don't even question it. You get that keyboard with that computer, and you just go, it's mushy, but you know, like, you can buy separate keyboards. You can either go, to Fry's, if you want to get a keyboard, try them out, or you can order them online, okay? I, of course, recommend trying anything out, but a good keyboard, okay, is slanted. Not flat. I can't type on a laptop worth a damn, even if it's got a decent keyboard, because it's flat and there's no rest, okay? So it's slanted, it's banked, right? It has resistance. You know, the keyboards use this little membrane thing with almost like a bubble under it. That's what springs it back, it's a little rubbery bubble thing. And that's what you mean by mushy. You want tactile response. If you're a touch typist, you want some resistance. You know, it used to be, I'm going to date myself, when PCs were first starting to be popular, they used to sell, it didn't come in some big kit. You used to, okay, what keyboard would you like? Right? And Northgate made a thing called the Omni keyboard, and it was the industry standard. It was, the big thing was Selectric, IBM Selectric. You wanted to try to emulate the feel of an IBM Selectric. And truthfully, I never typed faster than on the old IBM Selectrics. Does anybody remember those? Yeah, they were wonderful. I can remember when I first started using a Word. I swore, I wrote my first novel on a Royal Manual typewriter. And I was working as a word processing operator, but I'm like, I don't want to write on that. It's cold and inhumid and blah, blah, blah. And then I hadn't written for a long, long time, and I was using the Royal at home one day, and I heard ding, and I'm like, what the hell was that? And I realized I had to reach out and grab your arm and move the platen, and I'm like, done, sorry. You know, I've got the equivalent of Jack Kerouac's endless roll of butcher paper over there in that office. I'm going to take advantage of it now. So you want a keyboard that has a good response, that has a real sort of crisp, firm, it just sounds as anal retentive as it could be. Yeah, good, crisp, firm click on the... But it's really true. If you've got the bucks, and you really do, well, I intend to get one of these as soon as I possibly can. Avant Stellar. A-V-A-N-T. Two words. Stellar. Makes a keyboard that is just like the old Northgate Omni key. Spring-loaded keys. Function keys on the top and function keys on the left. I'm left-handed.
That's old school.
I know it is, and I miss it terribly because I was like this all the time. I use WordPerfect, not Word, and it's very functional. It's a touch typist dream, and a lot of stuff uses function keys, and if it's on the left, I used to carry my own keyboard to temp assignments because I used to have the function keys on the left. It's got a 10 key, but they've modified it modern. It's got the Windows keys and Control and Alt and all that other stuff, but it has that nice backward L shape return. And they're $200. I personally think it's worth it if you're doing this for... First of all, it's tax deductible. Second of all, it's, I won't get that later too. Second of all, look, you're a race car driver. This is your race car. All right. So if you got the bucks, and that's really important to you. So enough about typewriters, okay? But I just want to, I'm sort of micro detailing. Want to call your attention to things that go without question a lot of the time. Do you agree? Yeah. Avant Stellar, you have to order online, and if you just look up Avant Stellar keyboard, they have two different models. Now, for me, if you don't get something like that, I like a backlighting keyboard as well. If your keyboard has lights in it, it's kind of nice. You don't have to glare up your, you know, your room or anything like that. So, you know, for what that's worth. Honestly, computers, like I said, that's your business. Religious argument, not going to get into it. Monitors, all that, we're not going to get that fuzzy, okay? And we'll talk about what is on the computer as we go here, okay? I'm a big fan of having a cork board, at least. As you work on books, they can help you in a lot of different ways. They help you track things. Some writers use index cards to either almost storyboard their books or just to act as a kind of a big post-it holder for salient ideas. Remember, guy is dead, you know? For me, it's math. You know, I have three cork boards hanging in a vertical row, and I put roadmaps on. I write a lot of fantasy, but it tends to take place in the real world, and I'm a real stickler for geographic accuracy. I have this view that you'll buy a lot of my nonsense if you're like, I've been there, right? The last novel I came out with is Elegy Beach, and it takes place, the first third is all around Del Mar. The Del Mar racetrack in this post-apocalyptic sort of landscape, you know. And it's really fun to feel like you own that place. So for me, I put a lot of maps up. But, you know, a cork board of the space is a really, it's a giant post-it note in some ways, right? If you need visual recognition, if you like those clever little you are the jewel sayings or whatever the hell is important to you, great place for that, okay? Ooh, hit a nerve, did we? I am the light. You are the false light. I used to have my Royal Manual typewriter had a sticker on it that said they held the record for strikeouts too.
Yeah.
It's sort of negative reinforcement, I admit, but there you go. All right. Again, whether or not you are an analog or a digital person, have a dictionary on hand. I have a really great dictionary on this. My iPhone, I use it all the time. It has a really good thesaurus. Have a dictionary and a thesaurus on hand, either the physical book or digitally. I find it very hard nowadays to find any kind of software you can use on your computer. That's a good... Merriam-Webster used to have one, but now that's all online, and it's actually kind of a pain in the butt to use. It's an app, if you like. I'll give you the name of it. I have an iPhone app called Wordbook. It's a couple of bucks. They update it every now and then. And it will pronounce the word for you as well, which can save you embarrassment before you hear it. Me, I just like to have the word on hand, and when I come to it, press it. I sound like I'm using a speaking spell. I do anything for you. Anything. So, try to have it something on hand you can use quickly, because you don't want to stall, you know, you don't want speed bumps, right? You'd like to be able to use, you know, the word that you want and not its second cousin, as Mark Twain said. If you are not great with grammar, spelling, punctuation, I recommend two books. One is the Elements of Style, first of all. If none of you have heard of Elements of Style, grab somebody around here, beat him up, and take his copy. They're very easy to find. Drunken White wrote it. It's a very slim little book that is the most concise possible guide to good grammar and just clear statement in your fiction that you can run across. You can find these bookstores for a dollar or two all over the place. Or for all I know, it's an ebook now, which is kind of fun. The other one, In Matters of Form, is the Chicago Manual of Style. It's usually not cheap to run across. Brand new is expensive. expensive. An older version's okay. You're not proofreaders for a living, so you don't need the most current version, right? So you can find it used for $20-$25 usually. As a guide to what publishers do, what it and the AP style guide are the industry standards for what it's things like newspapers use them for. Okay, so you spell words up to 10 or 12, I forget which it is, and then you use the numeral. Right, I used to be a proofreader for a living, and these rules seem so arbitrary that that's why you pay $65 for these damn volumes, right? But it's an invaluable style guide. But at least elements of style and grammar, punctuation, are issues for you. Some of you might want the latest Writer's Market. I'll be perfectly honest with you. I'm really out of touch with all that. I don't know how relevant it is anymore. To me, it seems like it's so easy to discover these things online that I don't know if you really need to pay for that kind of stuff anymore. And I just don't need to deal with it anymore. So honestly, I'm kind of out of touch with that. But if you feel the need for references for submission and things like that, but there are much more practical and useful things that I'll get to here in a minute, too. Whether or not you use a lateral drawer or file cabinets, hard copy, anything you produce, want to keep. Hard drives crash. Monkeys sneak into your house and defecate on them. Whatever the hell, I don't know. But, it's really, really easy to get lulled into the security and convenience of digital media. And I am a digital guy, okay? Flip a flicker every now and then, that's what I mean. Hard copy always. I've had to rescan things. If you have access to a scanner or one of those printers that doubles at it, it's a lifesaver, if you have hard copy. So, if you have hard copy, invest in a decent printer. Nowadays, that's really easy. But I'll tell you the other reason. A lot of people still require physical submission. And I mean that in every sense of that possible phrase when it comes to publishing. Yeah? Oh, yeah, by the way, please feel free. I try to be as interactive as I can on these. I don't want to sit there and hold forth. You're here wanting to know things. So please feel free,
When you say a decent printer, does it need to be laser?
Inkjet printers are really good now. They tend to take forever, but get a good inkjet printer. And don't be lulled, just always remember that an inkjet printer is a way for an inkjet printer manufacturer to sell you more cartridges.
Right.
And so often you'll find you just need more for the replacement set of cartridges than the printer. So I do a lot of research before I buy something like that. There's a website called Newegg. They sell stuff, all right, Newegg.com. They're sort of like Amazon is for books. There's lots of reviews. They're a great way to see what people have a problem with. And I use I have a color inkjet printer. That's also a fax machine and a scanner. And I have a Hewlett Packard laser jet. I use Hewlett Packard 1020. I'm really happy with it. I replaced my old laser jet 3. That thing lasted 20 something years. Amazing printers, right? But the thing is you're going to be doing some actual submission of. I know this sounds so 20th century, but you're going to be actually mailing pages off to people, right? So, these are people who work in crappy offices, stacked with stuff, and tuna sandwiches on top of the manuscripts, and have no lighting, and really, really need to get through this crap. Make their life easier, because if it's badly printed. Bye-bye. That's your introduction to them, isn't it? Bye-bye. Screw this guy. Right? You don't want that. You want this. Right? Don't get superstitious about it. I used to spend $25 a ream when I was making $5 an hour on Eaton's Berkshire cotton paper. And it weighed 1,000,000 pounds. You'd mail that off. They're going to go. Just cut the paper. All right? But invest in it. Because it's not just something to produce content for you for storage. You're going to be mailing stuff out. But yes, hard copy. Okay, any story, any your progress on your books, anything, things crack.
quick tip: some of the tricks for saving money is going to these larger travel places. Sometimes
my experience with those is it's a great way to decide I'm going to make my carpet black now.
but the other thing is, the other back end backup is before you find out if they do a review on the market, Costco, because the Costco ones,
itself, and like especially HP, the replacement toner, the substitute toners, the cartridges themselves don't work as well. A lot of printers, there's a lot of variation, and the good thing about capitalism is it encourages all this competition. So some of them are good, but do your research. You know, that one of the things about Newegg is people will say, don't pay $80 for a cartridge, get it here. They'll do that, it's really invaluable. You can end up, a novel, 300 to 500 pages, whatever, you can go through a $70 cartridge like that. Yeah. I tend to go through probably 3 cartridges for a novel because you print, you revise, you print the thing, you send it out, your agent wants revisions, your editor wants revisions, blah, 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 probably printed 3,000 pages of 300 to 500 page novel. So yeah, I used the file cabinet. See, I knew I'd get back to the file cabinets. I divide sold stories and unsold stories. Okay, a lot easier if you need to deal with that, right? So when I write a story and it hasn't sold, I have an alphabetized thing of folders in the top one. Right, and I have a little sheet that we don't have a directory sheet here with access to that, do we?
No, you can do some copies. He's got a laser printer over there.
Okay, this doesn't have to be scanned. I have some sheets and we'll pass them around and you can get an idea here. I keep an info sheet for every story, and it lists this word count and where it's been submitted to. It has a name for it, very obviously being sold and who it sold to, what the rights you sold. What else you can do. I'll pass that around when you get an idea. But unsold stories go in the top. If I sell one, the credential gets in the lower. Okay? For the other two, folders, like, oh God, we were so lonely. They're like the Martians in Toy Story, goodbye, my friends. I am off to a better world. For novels, of course, I don't put the pages in there, but I do try to keep information about the novel in its own folder. I have a little section for novels, and I have a form for that as well. If you want to group other things like reviews, and things like that in that, it can be very useful. Information related to a court, if you want to keep your agent's correspondence or things like that, it can be useful to do it. Whatever works best for you. But I do find that separating them makes it a lot easier when you need information because, somebody 5 years from now can go, hey, are the rights to that? I read your story, Love's Tender Buttons. Are the rights to that available? And you're like, there's nothing better. Nothing sounds more professional. They go, hold on 1 second. Not, I'll call you tomorrow. You hit mute, you go, shit. You pull it out, you go, Love's Tender Buttons. Oh, yeah. It just needs an acknowledgement to these guys, blah, blah, blah. So, that's just great. It sounds great. When an interviewer asks you some question, and you're like, I don't remember writing that. Get a phone with a mute button. There, I didn't even write that one down. The other thing I use file cabinets for is itemized receipts. All right, I'll get into that in a minute, too. But I do things by year. My tax deductible category. There's not actually that many when you treat them categorically, maybe 15, And I enter my receipts in these things. We'll get to that, so I'm just going to touch on it right now. But I file those away by year. You are responsible for that to the IRS for 7 years. So you kind of need to keep that crap on hand. Okay? And I keep those in a file cabinet and they graduate from some big shoe box or something, because I tend to let it pile up and then get on my accounting program and finally enter them. Just because I'm telling you this stuff doesn't mean I'm like Mr. Nazi official guy. I let crap pile up and then I blow the dust bunnies off of it and I take care of business too, okay? The other thing, though, for your file cabinet, for your stuff, I stopped doing this. Any reviews you get, any mentions you get, now, I'll tell you, I stopped doing it. I was like, look, I am not my mom keeping a scrapbook on myself. This is just stupid, right? Then we went to sell the reprint rights to my novel, Ariel. It came out last year, and, was reprinted last year. And my agent said, hey, basically, we want leverage. We want to be able to increase the enthusiasm and interest. And look for blurbs, and I'll have any reviews, and I'm like, oh God, because this thing, you know, made notable books in the New York Times, right? I mean, this is like a paperback fantasy original, my first novel. I was 21, and I'm like, oh, who needs this? You know, blah blah blah, and I'm like, I got to really root for this now. And all of a sudden, I realized there was a real practical value to keep this crap. You know, 25 years from now, this was literally true. 25 years from now, you know, it's swell, says New York Times, might really help you enormously, right? So keep that stuff. You know, if even if you just shove it into a folder, clip it out, never see it again, that one time you need it, you're going to go, oh! You know, so keep it, okay? I'm sorry, quota fill. What's that?
Say I know. I'm a feature writer, so would the same thing apply to speaking reviews for articles?
Absolutely. The reason being, you have a leg up on who we heard in the select pile if you have some kind of professional resume. If you have been paid for your work, you have experience as a professional writer and can prove it, think of it as a resume. You know, yeah, it absolutely keep that. It's kind of giving your clippings to somebody. For all you know, you'll be doing a book proposal later for a nonfiction book that requires a lot of research. And if you can point to the fact that you know, people have actually been willing to pay you for this in the past, definitely adds some legitimacy to you, as opposed to that letter that they get every day saying, let me tell you about my vacation to France with my son, you know. You want to stand out from that. So being able to quote from that, provide them if necessary, definitely. Yeah, definitely have
so
that.
So the article's end of
the book. I would recommend trying to hold on to that stuff. It could be too bulky, but yeah, sometimes, you know, the other reason, you just don't know what you're going to do. And 10 years from now, you may do something in a subject you have covered previously. Mm-hmm. And if you can show somebody as part of the proposal something that was published. I mean, take a look at how many novels or feature films or book deals are made based on some article that appeared in the Atlantic Monthly or something, right? If you can go, look, that was there, that helps you enormously. Absolutely.
Yeah, what about the notes?
That's a work habit thing for you. If you're comfortable keeping I keep all my notebooks. I'm really weird about writing on yellow legal pads, and I keep them all. And I have this really weird, they're all in these big stacks, all right, filled, you know. Don't I sound like, and I live really close to elementary school, doesn't that sound crazy the more I talk, right? But I fill these things up with notes, and for some reason, I just know where they are, you know. And notes for some book years ago, details on something, I keep everything on them. I mean, computer upgrade lists and all this weird stuff. And I go, oh, I need that. And they sort of act like my memory, my externalized memory that's just not accessible to me. And what I remember is where they are, you know. So for me, part of my process is just to kind of know that. I have this strange holographic memory for data like that, you know, like my bookshelf. Somebody has moved from my bookshelf. There was an evil force in my home. So for me, I'm hitting puberty as we speak, sorry. I do try to keep notes, okay? You know, if you don't want that clutter, if you feel like that's played its role, don't hoard, you know? So that's kind of a personal thing. It really is going to depend on what you're comfortable holding on to. Let's talk about software. Whatever you like to write on, I'm sure most of you use Word, right? How many of you use Microsoft Word? You, of course. I used to be a word processing operator for years, and I loathe Word. I loathe it with a passion. It could not be a less friendly program. I'm a WordPerfect user, and I'm not going to like proselytize or anything like that. Saying I'm a WordPerfect user, I might as well come here and say, "Why, yes, I'm an alchemist." Here's the deal with any software you use, okay? Because, again, what you need is what you're comfortable with that gets the words out there, okay? But most publishers use Microsoft Word instead. They're copying from that. So whatever you do use, be sure it is Word compatible. Be sure that you can convert to Word. right? WordPerfect is pretty good. It's really good. At, you know, unfortunately for them, their advertising is, can work just like Word. I'm like, no. That's why I'm hitting you, because you don't stop it. But the other thing is try to, you'll find this very useful down the line. Try to be sure that you convert to PDF. PDF is, anybody can read those. Anybody, you know, they can typeset from that. They, you know, you can send stuff to almost anybody like that. And a lot of places will accept it. The other thing is convenience if you want to offer ever samples of your stuff or give away things. Having a PDF of it is you know, it can look really nice and anyone can, you know, can read, mangle, and disseminate. So that's really as much as I'll say about word processing. Is just be sure that you are compatible, okay? Be sure that your Microsoft Word compatible. It's really great to be able to print the PDF, okay? And can read Microsoft Word. Okay, some places you may have to go through some intermediary program. Depends on how much you really are in love with it, since most of your Word users stop now. I highly recommend whatever mail client you use, whatever you use for your emails, try to be sure that it allows you to maintain a contact list, a categorized contact list, or be sure you have some kind of contact software, business oriented stuff. There's a ton of it out there that lets you maintain a contact. When you come to places like this, you meet agents, you meet other writers you'd like to know, you meet, you know, think of yourself as you're a salesperson. You're selling your book, you're selling yourself, you're selling your expertise. People are potential customers in a way, right? You are selling something to your agent in order for him to sell it to an editor. You are selling something to people who want to buy you. You know, I'm really lousy at this because writers tend to use these things as why in my latest novel, I always forget to do that. You know, you get cards from people, you get websites, all of that. You want to be able to, 10 years from now, you're going to do a signing in Seattle. It might be nice to be able to go, give me all the people who live in Seattle that I've met in the last 30 years, and send an email, a nice email, you know, or newsletter or whatever, saying, hey, going to be doing a signing. Right, that's really useful. The other thing that's in that sense sort of supplanted that is also blogs. You know, if you maintain a blog, always announce that kind of stuff on it. You know, because you know a blog is a PR device for a writer as well. Far too often, you know, you can use a blog like that. You have no idea who's subscribing, who's reading, who's reading, whatever, but it acts as a sort of constant broadcast out there that you're not doing anything to have to maintain beyond the original writing. You know, the mailing list, do you guys remember Rolodexes? It acts as your old Rolodex, you know. And so categorize it in as many ways as you can, including notes, met at LJWC, things like that. Little reminders, you know. For me, it's very important to... when you get those cards, you know, from people, something like this, and it's all a blur, when I get home, you try to hinder that as soon as you can. Because if you let them pile up, 3 months from now, you're going to be like, there's going to be a lot of business card taken at, you know. And, you know, don't be disingenuous. I mean, don't just spam people with that. That does you more harm than good. But the value of a contact list is huge. You know, editors. Contact list for editors. All of these things, as you go to conventions and things like this, you're going to acquire a surprising amount of people who in Machiavellian, to sound Machiavellian, but it can be useful to you, right? But you know, other writers, readers, you know, all kinds of stuff. You know, back before there were when I used to do actual, you know, mailing lists before, and I used to just have a sign-up sheet. I'd bring them with me. You know, want to get my newsletter or want to get announcements, whatever. Well, you can do that too with emails if you want. You know, I maintain email newsletters for some things that I do. There's nothing wrong if you're doing a signing and having a little want more news or whatever. So what's Procter & Gamble? Yeah. I use a WordPress blog. Yeah, I don't like Blogger. I like a lot more control over my stuff, and I don't like giving control of my feed to anybody. Yeah. WordPress, very flexible. You know, now especially with version 3, really good.
Do you host it or do you?
I host it. I maintain my own website. I do everything. I designed my own website. I have many websites. I'm actually more famous as a DJ than a writer. I have three of the biggest podcasts, music podcasts, and they get about 750,000 downloads a month. And for a while, I made a living on a donate button. So when I talk about digital stuff, you know, other classes, that's kind of where I come from. That. But I do also, every book comes out, I give it its own website. Just for a minute. We live in a world where a lot of things are competing for people's attention. You know, even just in books now, right? And I really like, you know, books seem like a very static experience. They require solitude, they require focus, and there's this long linear process. How am I leaving? God knows when you're wearing a silk shirt. I swear to God. I mean, my God. Full contact teaching. So, looks like I picked the wrong day to stop snorting coke. So, where the hell was it? So, I'm really big on trying to expand the experience of the novel, of the book, beyond the printed page. And anything you can do to help that, to draw people in, to make them part of that experience, is very welcome to me. Every book I do has its own website. And because I'm a stickler for geographic accuracy in these fantasy books, a friend of mine went, why don't you do Google Earth Maps? All of your fake stuff takes place in real places. And I realized, you know, in Elegy Beach, they go from Del Mar to San Simeon, up the five. I'm like, you're right, every foot of that, you can follow over their shoulders. So there's these little route things, and there's annotations and quotes from the books and pictures. You know, you can follow the book in real time. It's an app, too. You know what I mean? You can download Google Earth and that route on your iPhone. So that idea is really cool. The idea that I can kind of walk behind Bilbo and Frodo is really kind of cool to me. And, to offer sample chapters, audio, samples from audiobooks, a forum, contact information. You know, even as a writer, the experience of you as a writer on a website, offering freebies, offering outtakes, this chapter was cut here, right? All of that is, to me, that's the thing about the internet. It's amazing for writers. Is you didn't used to have that kind of access. Now it's very direct, and that, of course, has a downside. Hey, how come you suck at this, yeah. Right? But if you blog, always keep it open for comments. Always invite participation. Respond to your comments. Try to find some nice way to respond. because you could ask a lot of wacky stuff. But yeah, you know, there is an online presence. Okay, I'm going to talk tomorrow about the writer as a performer, so I don't want to dwell on this too long, because that's kind of part of it, you know? And we don't have a lot of time for this today, so good Lord. So, all right, so email, contact list, okay? Maintain a contact list. I use Outlook. I don't know if Gmail can do that. Everybody's gone over to Gmail. I don't know if you're familiar with it. Decide for yourself. But that may be one of the downsides of it. I'm not really sure. Okay? It's really weird for me to advocate Outlook, but it's a good mail client, actually. I even use it to send my newsletter out. If your email client like Outlook, also lets you have calendaring, scheduling. I have a good scheduling program. Calendaring, very important. Right. You know, I trust me, you're not going to get like Brad Pitt and have to hire somebody to look, where am I now? You know, you need, but when something does come out, you do need to triage some of your stuff. You do need to schedule, you give radio interviews or whatever. You really, having some kind of reminder is very, very valuable to you. You know, the other thing, software-wise, that I will definitely count is... a good financial software. If you want to use Microsoft Money, if you want to use Quicken, or anything else, you need it to be able to allow you to itemize transactions so that you can produce at the end of the year a list of tax-related itemized deductions. It is so convenient. It saves you that 5 days of inventing swear words as you go through a shoebox, right? So as you know, this is deductible. This whole weekend for you is deductible. That drink is deductible. 50% of that drink is deductible. So if you want to throw half of it out. Invaluable for you to do that. I love it because I am not actually very good at this. So to have something take care of that for me is a really big deal. Your best practices should be, for me, I try to have a day a week where I enter all that crap. You know, I let it pile up and I enter. And one day I'll have that day a week. And enter your receipts, you know, and itemize them. Have something that itemizes. And then at the end of the year, you say, produce my tax-related stuff. And you can hand your appointment stuff or whatever, your files, and that sheet over to an accountant. And A, it saves you money on your preparation. It saves an awful lot of time. If you want to use TurboTax or something like that, it's actually not that hard to do it yourself until you're really, really getting into lots of complicated crap. But at this stage in your career, no reason not to do it yourself if you're comfortable with that. Okay? So, but use some kind of financial software. You know? I mean, even if... Just for the deductible stuff. Yeah. That won't stop me.
Which is...
There's some contention about how long you can get away with this. The IRS is you are allowed, as you are building a professional career, to write off stuff. I've read any number of cases where people say the IRS will only allow you to do that for 2 or 3 years before they go, look, dude, it's a hot mess, right? I've read any number of other people saying, no, that's pretty much if you are actively building that career and can prove it with the receipts and with the information and all this other stuff, they have to keep allowing it. They can't say you're not allowed to develop a career. So that I can't advise you on, but you are definitely allowed to do that for several years. Okay. Yeah, absolutely. This weekend is all deductible. You know, I have a list here of deductions, and I'm sorry I didn't get copies made. If you want to pass it around, but you know, here's the deal: any book you buy is deductible. For me, I write screenplays. Any movie I see is deductible. It's an admission. Okay. Your gas coming here, your airfare, whatever, deductible. My gas coming here, anything I pay to eat. Half of that's deductible. I think it's 25 cents a mile now for your car. So you can either write off the gas or do the mileage. It tends to work out better for the mileage. Lots of good financial programs like Quicken have mileage loggers. You know, at the end of the year they go, yeah, that was your business mileage. Thank you. You know, and you add that 9,000 miles up at 25 cents a mile. You're like, hell yes, I'll take that. You are self-employed. That percentage is deductible for your utilities. It depends on honestly on how much you use. And literally, Steve Erickson tells this hysterical story about being audited, and he used the dining room as an office. He deducted a portion, and they were like, "Did other people use the light in that room?" And he said, "Well, when my wife walked through, I'm sure some of the light hit her." He's like, "No, can't use all of it." I mean, literally, the guy was like, "No, the light hit your wife. You can't use that percentage. We have to lower it." And then he did some math about how much it cost him to do the audit because he ended up paying $60 more. And he's like, you know. So, you know, postage, percentage for your internet connection, anything that reasonably relates to your life, you know, you got to think, you know, my deal is, look, as a writer, any novel I read is research. I'm learning. You know, it's not an unreasonable, it's not a loophole. I'm learning. How he does it, even if he sucks, I learn from that, right? Professional library is what you are as a maintaining, as a writer. Any of the software, you know, that you buy related to that, absolutely not. Part of your internet connection, you know, business attire, you know, all kinds of stuff. There's really, and, you know, I could just go on and on with that, but if you just look up tax deduction writers on Google, you'll find lists and lists. I have mine here. My problem is I also am a DJ, and so I get to write off like going to clubs, which just rocks! Why, yes, I'd like another drink, please. you know, I can download stuff from Beatport and iTunes, and it's deductible. It's glorious. But also remember, you know, you gotta have, it's not free money. Just because it's deductible doesn't mean you can go ahead and spend money you don't have. That desk you buy is deductible, but you need the $300. All right. I'm going to whip through some of this right now because I'm sorry. I highly recommend get a decent PR shot of yourself. Get it digital. Yeah, we all hate it. Get a digital shot. Make it available. I just this week had that bite me because I have digital stuff. I have PR shots and all that crap. I broke one of my more basic rules. Have a PR kit available online, right? Somebody's doing an article on one of my podcasts in Dubai, and they asked for a PR, a headshot of me. And I'm like, I can email you one. And they wanted a high-res version. And I'm like, I can email you one when I'm back home. And I realized I don't have that. I could have just given them the URL, and there it went. Like a dummy, here I am in the wilds of La Jolla. And so, you know, having something like that on, again, that's that, sure, hold on 1 second, isn't it? And I blew it, all right? So having something like that available, you know, even some local paper wants to do an article on a local writer, you know, having that stuff on hand, you know, really, really convenient. It's not hard. The nice thing now is you don't have to go somewhere and pay a fortune for, you know, you can take 100 digital pictures and find there's one ugly one, but if you do that to it, so on to my next suggestion, get a decent photo editor. There's lots of them. You don't have to use Adobe Photoshop. You don't have to be a master. You know, there's lots of stuff available. There's what's the one for real? My mic is totally blank. Oh, I can't remember. But anyway, fun for all makes, and it's perfectly fine. But this time, you know, half the time you buy a camera, they give you some photo editing software, right? You want to be able to crop the image, make it black and white or color, right? Things like that. Because sometimes they want it square, all right? Change the DPI, the dots per inch. For print, they want like 300 DPI. Online, 72 DPI. No point in it being higher than that. So that extent of of image manipulation is about the most you want. Okay, we're about to run over, so if you need to go, I'll cover a couple more things. If you need to go, we got to get the hell out of here. So, and I pretty much covered what I want. Snag me when you see me. I'll carry this around with me, and I will show you the info sheets for novels. And here's one thing before you go: submission sheet. Keep a sheet showing this story went out on this date to this magazine, and if you have the editor name to that editor and a query date. 3 months from now, send them an email. Keep that list. That's what I use. One of the things I use CorkBoard for. Okay, that's the only other thing I want to tell you for organizational purposes that will help you enormously. Okay. So sorry. I know that this is going to be jammed. I knew when I went in, but I hope that this was helpful. Okay. Thank you guys for getting out and coming out.